Hey there, listeners. We have something special cooked up for you in this episode, so stay tuned for the first in our special series recorded live at HIMSS 24. Let's do this!
New choices, new players, new models of care. You know consumer-first healthcare is everywhere. For us to build the future, to see what's new, we gotta look at the world from a different point of view. Consumer innovation ain't going away. I say it's here to stay. Today it leads the way. We gotta drop the silos. We're all the same team. Experience, business, tech, and marketing. So join us now. Join the revolution. Consumer-first health is the evolution. Status quo or like status no. Yeah, this is the healthcare rap. Yo, come on, let's go.
Welcome back to the leading podcast about consumer innovation. I'm Jared Johnson, and here's what's going to go down today. This is the first in our series that Zane and I recorded live at HIMSS 24 in Orlando, Florida. The theme of this year's conference was creating tomorrow's health, and we wanted to know what that means from as many perspectives as possible. So today you'll hear from three health system innovation leaders. First up will be Andy Chu, Chief Product Officer at Providence. Next, you'll hear from Dr. Evie Cunningham, Chief of Virtual Care and Digital Health at Providence. And we'll wrap up with Crystal Broy, Chief Digital Officer of the Medical University of South Carolina, or MUSC. You'll want to listen for some of the themes, such as determining the right problems to solve, balancing the needs and capabilities of clinicians and consumers, and designing and building in a way that's pushing the envelope, yet still realistically achievable for today's health systems as they continue to face some historic challenges. It's time to dive right in. Are you ready? Let's go. I'm here with Andy Chu. So can you give us your name, title, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah. So, well, thanks of all. Thank you for having me. Andy Chu. I'm the SVP of Product and Technology Incubation at Providence Digital Innovation Group. Specifically, my group consists of mainly engineers, product designer, researcher, data scientist. We build products in healthcare, utilizing Providence as our first customer. And when we can scale a product within Providence, then we typically bring on a management team, we raise external capital, and then we spin out companies. So we have done this four times. That's what I do.
How do you know which products to develop? There are so many.
That's the billion-dollar question. We have a fairly small team. We can only work on, you know, one or two, three things at the very most. So oftentimes we have to go through a process really to vet out things that we can't work on. But the first thing first is really focusing on the problem, focusing on the patient, the consumer problems, how they're interacting with the health system, or we start looking at our caregiver problems. So, and we try to go as deep in understanding those problems as possible. And then we also look at, if those problems exist, how big of that problem? Is it a specific Providence problem or is it a health system at large problem? And then we put through a lens to look at what existing solutions there are out there. Obviously, the big EHRs, they have solutions. A lot of startups may have solutions. And then we started triangulating around what specific thesis we want to go after. And then from there, we typically build a prototype. We work with a specific operations group and that are willing to rapidly give us feedback. And as we test and build these prototypes, and if we're successful, then we try to scale across Providence. Because Providence, we have seven states, the business model is fairly complex, different pay arrangement types as well. So if we can scale it within Providence, we have pretty good confidence that whatever product that we're developing, it also would resonate with the market. But while we're developing, we also do voice of customer research, and then we look at doing the TAM analysis, look at the market size, and we also talk to venture capitalists as well to get their feedback early on. So before we make a bet, we do a lot of research because there's only so many shot on goals that we can do. So we want to make sure whatever that we can start to develop, we're going to do a lot more research and validate before one line of code is actually written.
Okay, so let's go down that a little bit. So you pick a problem.
Yep.
Looks like the scale is going to happen.
Yep.
Looks like first go at it. The feedback loop from operations this is solving a problem that's helpful for us to solve in this way.
Yep.
That still, I would imagine, leaves you with a lot of problems and a lot of tentacles that come down from that, a lot of ways that you have to solve it. So what questions are you looking to solve these days? What problems are you out there actively trying to solve?
Yeah, so, well, as you know, we have a product that we are spinning out, Priya, which is around consumer and patient identity and engagement. So that is being spun out. And then in the meantime, we actually have been working on the problem of in-basket messaging. So for those of you not familiar with it, essentially as more and more people are moving, especially the last few years, because everyone's remote, our doctors or care teams are getting a lot of messages, right, coming in from our patients. So it's gotten to a point, it's not really sustainable because our doctors are spending hours after, you know, full day long of seeing patients, and then now they have to not only do the charting, but also have to go figure it out of responding to all those messages. So that's the problem space that we have been focusing on. And the way we think about it is there are three different ways. One is using a chatbot or developing a new interface. As the patient are writing these messages, we can give them direct answers. Right? So as a patient, it's good for you because you get the answers right away. And we know there's a huge percentage of these messages. They're not asking for, you know, clinical questions. They're asking for billing related questions, rebooking appointment, or some questions related to medications. So we have good confidence that we can actually use a bot to answer a lot of those questions. And then second, we also want to have the capability, if a operations group is willing to and is capable to do live chat, right? So from the bot, we can easily transfer to do a live chat. And then thirdly, when the care team has to go into hyperspace, in our case, Epic, to answer those questions, we're working on a mechanism whereby we're using the large language model and other things to pull information out of the chart to help the care team to answer those questions very quickly. So that is a solution that we're developing, more of an end-to-end solution in addressing acute problem in healthcare right now.
I love it. And when we talk about an acute problem, there's always the question of who benefits when we solve this problem.
Yeah.
And we were speaking earlier about how a lot of parts of healthcare, a lot of problems that are being addressed by digital means are kind of a B2B2C
yep.
type problem.
Yep.
So
yep.
How do you explain that? Because there's a couple of different value propositions, I guess, that have to happen.
Yeah, totally. That's a great question. So if you look at one, we have to build trust with the patients, right, or the consumer. So if you go into, for example, the Providence app, when you actually click on the messaging icon, when you start a specific conversation or you want to start a specific conversation with your care team, we actually explain to you, hey, if you're asking for billing questions, here's a link, or here's a deep link to within, you know, our billing portion where you can pay your bills. Now we actually also have live chat enabled for people that have questions related to financial assistance. So if it's during those hours, we can say, hey, there's someone live can chat with you right now. Would you like to do that? So you have to meet patients halfway where they are, and you have to explain to them. You may not need to send a message, but you have to give them a way to answer those questions, right? That's where our models that really comes in, because when people are typing in the message or they're trying to compose a message or they're chatting with our chatbot, we actually understand the intent. And based on those intents, we'll try to answer those questions. And if we can't, of course, we'll let them continue to send the message. But if we can, we have an answer, we want to give them right away. So that's actually good for the patient, right? Then you're not sending a message to the care team. It might take them, you know, a day, 2 days, 3 days, who knows, depends on, you know, complexity of the question, how busy the office is and doctors and nurses. They can get the answer right away, right? But that's also good for the care teams because the volume messages can also be reduced. They don't have to answer or just forward a message to another department because they can't answer it anyway. So by using this approach, we're helping the patients. We're also actually also helping the care teams as well.
I do think healthcare is becoming much more aware, and I do think genuinely Providence has been at the forefront of helping everyone understand the reason why we get the types of feedback we do from patients about that was hard. This part of the process was not easy. It wasn't convenient. It's because we're used to that in other areas of our lives,
right,
just as people. And healthcare hasn't always recognized that, but I think we're doing a lot better job now and saying it's worth spending time to solve that problem.
Yes, yes. We do a lot of consumer research. We do, you know, a lot of them are blinded. And then we also sit down with our care teams, look at their problems. Because it's, you have to solve both of the problems, right? You can't completely optimize for one and not the other. So that is oftentimes a lot of people don't understand, right? Yes, you may answer all the patient questions, or you may not be able to, but or you can funnel the questions to another place, but you're going to may put extra burdens in some other places, right? So how do you find that fine balance is very important. The other thing is, for most frontline caregivers, they have a specific workflow and they have to deal with all these different systems, right? So you can't just say, hey, I'm going to disrupt everything that you're doing. It's almost dead on arrival. So I think just the devil's in the details, and you have to really live and sort of walk the shoes of those individuals and really understand the problems, right? And then you can start thinking, okay, how do we actually design a system that actually can solve problems on both ends?
Yeah, well, I like that. It's an acknowledgement, I guess, that when we talk about consumer experience or the consumer side of healthcare, that doesn't remove it from the clinician side. It's just that there are parts of that experience that historically haven't been addressed as much. And so we're not doing it at the expense of the clinician experience by far. That might be the biggest way to solve a lot of consumer experience problems.
Yeah, I mean, the way we look at it, right, these are, we call it sacred encounters. So we want to put human to interact with humans because those are sacred encounters. And those are also very private moments, right? We want to put human back really in charge of those things. Technology is not going to be good at that. But there are a lot of, I call it those dumb things, right? Or things that clinicians, like, no one went to medical school to answer billing questions, or like really the administrative type questions, right? Or nurse. So we talk about top of license for a lot of our clinicians, right? They want to practice what they have been trained for. So I think technologies is really good at looking at repeater patterns, right? And for a lot of these administrative stuff, we can just take it off to help the patients and also help the clinician. As the technology matures, we can help both, again, patient and the clinicians as well. Because if you look at the overall market as a health ecosystem in the country, with fewer people going into medicine, be it on the doctor's side or the nurse's side, so we need to help our clinician to be more productive, right? So that's how we view the world, is how we can use technology to help our clinician, and then therefore we can also help the patients.
Okay, so we are here at HIMSS. We're recording this. The theme of the conference this year is building tomorrow's health. What are your thoughts on that theme?
I think it's here already. I think if you look at bits and pieces of it, I mean, I'm super excited about where digital health and large language model is, you know, what we can do with those technologies. And then again, looking at patterns, that's what this technology is really good for, right? And back to what we just talked about, how we can use those technologies to help patients to get more access to care more easily. And the same token, helping clinicians, right, serve their communities, serving their patients more effectively as well. So I'm excited about the future. It's going to take a few more steps to get there. I think another thing that I'm also excited about is that there are a lot of initiatives, and I think Microsoft just announced something called the Train, Trustworthy and Responsible AI Network. So we're part of it, and same as a number of other health systems. It's important to, as we gonna lean in more around artificial intelligence, is very important to really putting the operational processes and know-how to make sure whatever AI models that we're putting in place, you can operationalize it in a safe and private way. That's something that we have been thinking a lot about. We internally have put together a whole process in place as we rolled out more and more of the AI models.
Well, I appreciate the time, Andy, and thanks for giving us a look into, you know, how you're viewing healthcare and the problems you're addressing.
Great. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Evie Cunningham, Chief of Virtual Care and Digital Health at Providence. I'm an OBGYN physician by training, so that's like kind of my background, but I lead a large team at Providence where we have a very diverse portfolio of different products and services that provide care transformation capabilities for the health system. So we have everything from large inpatient telemedicine programs like teleneurology, telehospitalists, telepsychiatry, ICU. We have remote patient monitoring programs like Cadence for primary care for congestive heart failure, diabetes, and hypertension patients. And then we also have digital products. So one of the products in particular that I hope we get to talk about today is MedPearl, which is a digital assistant and clinical intelligence engine that supports clinicians at the point of care with helping their patients.
I always like to start with the problem that it's addressing,
right.
You know, the problem that it's helping to solve.
Right. So initially, if you can imagine, we have so much patient data that has now accumulated in patients' charts in the electronic health record, right? So clinicians have a tremendous amount of data that they're responsible for on their patients that's living in the electronic health records. And the knowledge does not live in the electronic health record. So electronic health record is not organized around clinical content, and it's not clinically intelligent. So everything that we need to do from a knowledge perspective, we either need to remember because it has to be in our head, or we have to go outside of the electronic health record to look things up. So it's a very fragmented experience today as a clinician, and medical knowledge doubles every 90 days. So it's just not humanly possible for us to keep up with everything that we need to know and with all of the data that's in the chart on the patients. So what we did is we developed a clinical intelligence engine called MedPearl that curates and organizes medical knowledge and patient data around a specific clinical context or condition. And we have over 600 guides and algorithms curated in this knowledge base that constitutes about 95% of what a primary care or frontline clinician sees every day.
Wow.
And so the clinicians that are using MedPearl today, they're almost using it as like a co-pilot experience, where they open up the application when they're seeing a patient. And not only does it give them, hey, I think this patient has gout, for example. They have a big swollen toe, and I think they might have gout. So they look up gout. It tells them all the next best actions on what to do with a patient that may have gout. And then all of the patient data is organized around what has been done on that patient, what hasn't been done on that patient already. So it speeds up our workflows significantly. We've had at Providence, we started incubating this product about 3 years ago. It's my baby, basically. But I have this amazing team that of technologists and clinicians that have built this clinical intelligence engine together. And we are now scaled across Providence. We have over 7,000 users, all clinician users.
Wow.
Over 200,000 searches have been conducted in the context of different visits. And we just signed a couple of non-Providence partners that we're going to be bringing the application to. And then it was announced that MedPearl is available, the knowledge base is available in Microsoft Teams and in the Azure Marketplace. So we're hoping to bring it to the world so that other clinicians can benefit from this amazing technology.
That's fantastic. And I know with a lot of digital health tools, the question is, how do we increase adoption? How do we help people not just become aware of the value, the advantages it has in their workflow, but help them kind of have an easier on-ramp, you know, kind of reduce some of that friction. How has that been to onboard people?
Yeah, so it's actually a very clinically intuitive product. So we actually designed it in a human-centered design approach around the clinicians. So instead of saying, here, we think you need this piece of technology, what we said is, hey, you understand this problem, right? With referrals, for example, from primary care to specialty care, there's a lot of friction there. The primary care docs understand that problem. The specialists understand the problem. How do we solve this problem with a solution that will make sense to you? And so that's really how the design process of MedPearl began, was in a very human-centered design approach where we brought together clinicians with UX designers and engineers, and they started, you know, asking us a lot of questions, almost like a jobs to be done approach. And through that process, we iterated and developed and designed this product. It's been pretty easy to get people to adopt it. We've also had to work really hard to fit it into the workflow. So for example, single sign-on needs to work. It needs to be a frictionless experience when you're launching it. So right now the clinicians can launch it from the electronic health record. So it's easily readily available right when they're in a patient's chart. So it fits into the workflow. And then the same thing with Teams. When they're in Teams, they're going to be able to launch it as well. So doing everything that we can to make it really seamless experience and making it readily available, those are all keys to getting clinicians to adopt things. And then the other thing is that it's really easy to use. So it doesn't take several hours to train or an investment of your time to learn how to use it. It takes a minute to figure out how to use it. It's just really easy to use. So for us, I think that's been why we've had such a winning strategy. And then we measure the impact and the outcomes of what happens with the application. So we know that the clinicians, through feedback and through reporting how this application influences their decision-making, we know that 20% of the time, they don't need to place a referral to a specialist because the information they receive gives them what they need to take care of the patient. So it reassures them, gives them the information they need, and supports them in being able to do the best care for the patient. 72% of the time, they remember to do a part of the workup, order an imaging test, something that needs to be done, start a first-line therapy before we go to the specialist. So that improves the efficiency of that transition from primary care to specialty care. And then 20% of the time, they change the specialty that they send the patient to based on the information they received. So if you can imagine, sometimes patients get sent to a specialist and that specialist says, oh, I'm the wrong specialist. You need to go to this other specialist. Well, now we're actually supercharging that decision-making at the point of care so that we're reducing the friction, these missed opportunities, inefficiencies by empowering our clinicians on the front line.
The conference theme is building tomorrow's health. I'm sure those words were chosen, you know, very, very carefully. What are your thoughts on the conference theme and how any of the things that you've been presenting on this week or been working on have to do with that theme?
Well, I feel like we've been building tomorrow's health for a really long time. I mean, there's been several versions of like health 2.0, health, you know, everybody's been talking about it. And one of the things I would say that I noticed, and I mean, I'm a doctor, right? 3 years ago, I had nothing to do with technology. I was running a medical group, right? Technology wasn't even in my role. But what was happening was there was a lot of technology and a lot of people talking about technology, but it wasn't any of the people who were actually doing the work that were really involved in developing the technology. So a lot of the stuff that came into the clinical space fell flat. It just didn't get adopted at scale or didn't get utilized as well as it could be. So technology isn't the problem, right? The problem was that we didn't have the right people at the table building the technology together. So I think that what I've seen change, right, this is why I'm more hopeful today, is that clinicians are really getting involved in healthcare technology. If you look, there are so many more doctors and clinicians that are here at this conference compared to even 2 years ago. And we're realizing that we all have to do this together. If we're really going to transform healthcare delivery, it has to be together with the technology community and the clinician community or the people doing the work to really kind of make this happen. And so I do feel really hopeful. I also think there's been a lot, with generative AI coming out, it's just unlocked so many possibilities for the future that maybe weren't as easy to develop and scale in the past. And so I think that is going to obviously help be game changing. Obviously, it's not like fully integrated and adopted in the clinical space yet, but it's definitely on its path. And I think that we're going to see a lot of transformation as a result of that.
Any other thoughts we haven't covered yet just about how all these innovations can impact the consumers who are being cared for?
We need to get to a place where patients only need to come in when they really need to be physically in person to see a clinician. And then everything else, we need to empower them and enable them to either self-serve or digitally interact with the patient so that they can be treated virtually or digitally. And so that's the future that I want to see happen. That's the ecosystem of different digital entry points that I think we need to create for our patients. And so that's the direction of travel for Providence, and I think for the industry in general.
Dr. Cunningham, it's been a pleasure to have you. It's been a pleasure to just hear what's coming and how we've arrived at these new exciting things that are happening now. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, we're so excited to have Crystal Broy here, Chief Digital Officer of the Medical University of South Carolina. Crystal, it's good to see you here in person.
Good to see you, Zane. It's been a while.
I know, it has. So how are things going? I know we did a show, a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
How's the family? How's everyone in Charleston? How's Franco?
Charleston's doing good. It's getting warm, so we're getting ready to start doing water activities, which we're super excited about.
Nice.
Franco's doing great. He's held down the fort while I'm at various trade shows, which I appreciate that he's doing. He's moving some projects along, which is great. We're also hiring. We're hiring a technical business analyst and a program manager, because now we have more than just one or two vendors that we're working with. We have several. Yep. So we need someone that can actually manage the higher level of the vendors, and then we'll still use our project managers to manage the day-to-day of things. So
fantastic.
Super excited to have our team grow, which is awesome.
To those listening, this show should go out, within a few days, maybe a week.
Great,
so hopefully the job's still live. Reach out to Crystal, folks.
Yeah, absolutely. Or go to musc.edu and look under careers for anything under digital transformation.
Fantastic. Well, obviously we're here at HIMSS. Curious, Crystal, as someone who goes to a lot of these events. We see all your travel posts on LinkedIn. What's the vibe like here so far? What are you seeing? What are you experiencing? What are you thinking?
It's loud on the show floor, and it's only been open for an hour. So that's pretty exciting. There's a lot of people here. There's 35,000 people. So a little bit bigger than Vive or Health. And the difference between those shows and this one is you see the entire arena of healthcare.
Sure.
It's not just the technology, what you're going to put attached to the EHR, that kind of stuff. You start seeing beds and rooms and things like that here that lets you have a different perspective from the patient journey and keep that in focus. So I like that about HIMSS. The education here is really great. There's a different mix of people. There's more nurses, more doctors that come. So it's nice to listen to them as you're walking through, talk about, did you see that AI thing? Oh, that'll never work, or this will work, or I wish we had that at our hospital kind of stuff. The other thing that I think is really interesting is here we have booths from different countries.
Oh, okay.
So there's the Taiwan pavilion corner behind your shoulder. There's a Brazil pavilion. There's a Japan pavilion where they're bringing technologies from their countries to share what they're doing there for here. So kind of good learning globally as well.
Fantastic. I'll have to see if there's a Canada one, my home country.
There you go. And the keynote speaker, the one who kicked us off this morning, was from HIMSS Italy.
Oh, wow.
And HIMSS is having a global health conference in Rome in May.
That sounds like we need to go.
I know, right? let's just make that our next plan.
Yes.
So that's exciting. And then I think I was at the CXO Summit yesterday, and there's a lot of presentations on AI.
Yep.
Which is very exciting. Of course, there wasn't. We wanted to play a game, and every time we said AI, we had to check off and see who had the most.
Yep.
But the thing is that I think that validated where we are, we're halfway in a journey.
Okay.
We're not doing baby steps anymore. We've got some big girl programs going.
Sure.
But I think, there's three ways to play in AI.
Yep.
There's the bots. There's the, RPA, that kind of stuff. We use Notable for that a bit. It scans patient charts. It sends out notifications. Hey, Zane, you've got an appointment tomorrow. Confirm, cancel. We use it for care gap outreach. So, if you have, right now we're doing mammograms, soon we'll do diabetes and heart. Say, hey, your doctor thinks you might be due for a visit or something. Can you schedule right here on your phone? That's one way to play in AI. And I think we're right in the sweet spot of where that is right now. Okay. A lot of people are either close to or at where we are. We're maybe a little bit ahead. Then there's the second area, which is much more natural language processing, trying to use things like ambient technology. We have a pilot going on right now with DAX, with our doctors, and hearing other people. And there's a couple ambient tools here at the show. And a lot of people are saying, it's good when you get them acclimated to it.
Sure.
So as you and I've talked so many times about change management.
Yes.
And trying to do that training and that, getting people to adopt. And I think that's the big part of all of this sort of ChatGPT stuff is figuring out how it fits in the workflow.
Yep.
Figuring out how you're going to use it. Making sure they feel comfortable. Because there's nothing that a provider wants more than, they never went to school to type.
Right.
So they don't want to type.
Right, right.
But they also, have gone to a lot of school.
Yes.
So they don't want to look stupid.
Yes.
So
yes.
You want to make sure that they feel very comfortable and it's very easy and it becomes second nature.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that I think is hard for phase two adoption.
Yeah. Well, I think, my reflection on that back when I used to work in health systems is so much of change management needs to be done at the beginning, where oftentimes we kind of wait till the end and we think of change management as just like a communication plan, but it's so much broader than that. But I love what you just said about engaging physicians and the fact that they're educated, but they may not be educated in digital health, really then becomes like an ego issue. And a lot of times when we're leading change, we don't think about the human behind things. And yeah, we don't want to make a physician look dumb. You know, it's not technically not their job to know about digital health, so that's okay. And so that's where our role comes. And as we roll out these projects, we need to be thoughtful in the beginning.
Right.
You know, where might we have some issues with folks and how can we get out ahead of it and start doing the education or the onboarding to turn detractors into supporters. And so,
and even, I mean, we just hired a change manager. Lisa's awesome.
Yeah.
She looks at a project at the beginning and goes, who are the stakeholders?
Yes.
And not just, you know, even, it's not just providers. Nobody wants to look stupid at their job. They know how to do their job. They do it well. So if you give them a new system and they don't know how to find how to submit a PO or how to do something else, whatever they're used to doing, they get frustrated with the tech, right? So, but Lisa looks at the stakeholder list at the beginning, like who should know about this? Well, it's going to be the person at the front desk, but the office manager needs to know. The doctor needs to know to give her a little more patience and kindness. The higher level people in the organization need to understand that this is coming. So a change is coming up and down the board.
Yes.
And doing those communications at the right points before you pilot, before you do stuff. And also to communicate that you're doing a pilot.
Yes.
And that it is a pilot and things will go wrong and we will fix it.
Yes.
We found when we rolled out Notable that you know people were like, oh, it was bumpy at the beginning, so we just told patients not to use it.
Yes.
What?
Yeah, you can't do that.
You can't do that?
Yeah, no.
Tell us what's wrong so we can fix it.
Yes.
It's like, oh, and when we talked to them, it's like, oh, we fixed that like 5 months ago.
Yeah.
Like, so go back and look. Listen, and we had communicated it out, but it never got down to the people who needed to know.
Yeah.
So we're refining those processes as well.
That's fantastic. Crystal, as you think about this event, is there anyone you're hoping to meet, anything you're hoping to see, anything you're hoping to hear?
I'm looking to see if there's anything new that we should be aware of. Not because we will buy it now.
Right,
so
right.
Let's be real. Yes. It takes a good 18 months for me to get a budget for something, right?
Careful. A lot of solution companies listen to this podcast. They're going to start calling you.
That's fine, but understand that I can't buy anything for 18 months.
Because
I've got to look and compare and see what's out there to get people ready, right?
Yes,
so.
Yes.
I'm going to go like, you know, what's coming down the pike is this. And in a year or 2 years, it's going to be good.
Yes.
We started doing that with VoiceBot chatbots 18 months ago.
Yes.
And then ChatGPT came up and it became crazy. And then they got a whole bunch better. And so then people got really excited.
Yes.
So, and we're implementing that this summer. So we're very excited about that.
That's wonderful.
And that's that second phase of AI that I was talking about,
sure.
Right? Is that voice chat, but you have to be patient as you do the Epic in basket or you do that. We're doing pilots in both.
Yep.
Because you have to train the voice. It's got to get used to saying, MUSC and not Musk.
Yeah. I made a mistake when I first started working with them. I'm like, is it Musk or MUSC?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, the chatbot and voicebot need to learn that too.
Yes.
So it knows how to understand and say it, right? So we're still correcting it a little bit there.
Yes.
Then the third phase is like the really clinical data.
Yep.
And from what I'm hearing, people are like, they want to, but data, there's a lot of talk yesterday about data not being ready and really combing over data and putting data in the right places that it can be used by researchers, by doctors looking for patients that have this care gap or something else that needs to be taken care of. And I feel like, you know, we feel like we're so far behind and there's so much we could do there, but there's so much we have to do to get there.
Sure.
And I think that very few health systems are above that. There's a couple of the really good ones out there, but that have those types of departments with AI people and all that kind of stuff.
Well, it sounds like MUSC is well on its way to being the best. So.
Oh, well, we think so in some places, but we have some work, I think, that we could do with, you know, clinical decision support and stuff that we're looking to do. So that's, and so I felt validated that like we're really good on bots. We feel really comfortable with that. We're getting there on ChatGPT and that. And there's still some data work that we need to do. And so those things are validating and it gives us hope for where places we can go.
Awesome. Well, most important question before we close out.
Yeah.
In the pre-show, I overheard you talking about donuts and dogs. Can you tell me about that?
Oh, yeah. So the different booths have different food.
Oh, my gosh.
And so there was a booth in the back, True Bridge, I think, and they were frying little mini donuts.
Oh, my gosh.
Which were amazing.
I need to go.
Yeah. But then in the way, way back, there's a puppy park.
No way.
And so there were six puppies. They were just running around. You wash your hands and go in and play with the puppies. And so I took a picture of me with the dog because, you know, it's so fun. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was hilarious. So a nice, good stress reliever.
Only at Hams.
Yes,
at Hams.
Exactly.
Well, Crystal, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, anytime. It's good to see you both.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you heard, please spread the word. Tell your colleagues to tune in for all the awesomeness, then leave a review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This show is produced by Shift Forward Health, the channel for changemakers. Subscribe to Shift Forward Health on your favorite podcast app, and you'll be subscribed to our entire library of shows. See our full lineup at shiftforwardhealth.com. One subscription, all the podcasts you need, and it's all for free. And remember, we might have a lot of work to do in healthcare, but we'll get there faster together. Thanks again.